fortunately or unfortunately, depending on what range the temperatures might be, while you're listening to this and where you're at. How you doing, everybody? Welcome back to another star-studded edition. It's star-studded. I guess we're stars now.
We are now.
We can be. We're all stars now, really.
Well, get your game on.
Welcome back once again to We Like Bad Music Only, the only music-related podcast on the entire dang internet. How you doing? I'm your good pal, Polly, and of course, joining me as always is our good pal, Garden.
Heyo.
And everyone's favorite dad, Psychic Heist.
What's up?
What was that? Trying to be a tough guy?
Yeah.
Is this your tough guy voice? Is this the new you that you were telling us that you were going to put forth this episode?
Yeah. Yep. It's just something that happened. Like, my oldest turned 12, and I was like, yeah, that's pretty big, you know? And suddenly I just started talking deeper and tougher.
Redirecting all the testosterone from your balls into your throat.
That's right.
That's how that works, right? That's how... Is testosterone stored in the balls? It probably is. I know pee is stored in the balls, but I don't know if that's where they put the testosterone or not.
I think there's some testosterone, but your endocrine system is all throughout your body, really. So there's little pockets all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like
little balls all over the place.
You have little hidden testicles in your body that you don't know about.
Now you do.
Welcome. Yeah. If we're here to do nothing, at least we can enlighten.
Exactly.
Welcome. Now you know about the testicles that you have, like, in your right wrist and the one that's above your right eyebrow.
Do you think that is funny, Butthead? Do you find it amusing that we will be discussing the testicles?
Beavis and Butthead. It's so good. It's so good.
Ages well.
It really does.
Well.
It's surprising how well. Like I recently rewatched the first three seasons of King of the Hill. Speaking of Mike Judge, and like, you want to talk about a show that still aged pretty well. Talk about a show with a conservative protagonist that isn't a monster. Talk about a show with a conservative protagonist that doesn't have to just sit around and write like his whole bit is literally, I don't like the gays. I don't like the blacks. I don't like the non-binaries. Which that's basically like what all conservative humor is now. Like the anti-woke sitcom. Like, did you see this?
Yeah.
Did you see the one that Twitter tried to do?
I saw that. I saw someone posted Admiral Clank.
The new norm.
On the Discord. Yes.
And it's so bad.
I didn't watch it though, because I didn't want to like pay
well,
it
no,
anything. But
obviously.
I saw the advertisement. I was like, oh, I just shook my head. Like,
but it's just like an old man just spouting a list of things he doesn't like. Whereas, you know, Hank Hill is like literally a character. And all of these shows think that they're like recreating All in the Family, but they completely miss the point of Archie Bunker.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So. Anyway,
I believe my exact words in the server when somebody posted the new norm tweet was, no offense, but I would literally rather put a gun in my mouth than click that.
I think we all would. Like, the sweet embrace of nothingness in the end, I think, is probably a hell of a lot better than enduring anything that might count as quote-unquote conservative comedy. I think I would absolutely take full-on suicide over that at any point. We're getting real dark here, huh? Boy, I think we tried to be
less dark than the pre-roll, but we still went there.
The pre-roll was real dark, and we're
we'll
not sure
we'll just let it out. Let it out.
But it's still just seeping in. It's probably going to be me for the next 4 months. Polly, just happy-go-lucky, but every once in a while, she's going to say something. It's just going to be like, oh, my God. Polly, are you okay? Are you okay?
It's 100 million degrees outside. I turned 32 the day after we record this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all
good.
It's all downhill from here, Garden. It's all downhill from here. But yeah,
Don't worry. My neck has been there for about 5 years now.
Oh, I feel you on that one. Ever since, like, 2001, I've been feeling you on the whole neck thing. Woo!
2001.
I'm not kidding! I'm not kidding. Anyway, this is We Like Bad Music Only, where we are smack dab in the middle of a project where pick an album from our history that the other hosts may not think we like, and then we talk about it, and we make them listen to it, and we have a nice... It's show and tell! You know, and that was like a whole lot less an elegant way of saying that, which I knew that it was called show and tell, just my brain completely just took the detour down the side streets to explain what it was, despite the fact that literally everybody knows what show and tell is. So, since I have proven myself completely incapable of utilizing the English language whatsoever, I'm going to go ahead and pass things off to Garden to continue hosting duties for the rest of this episode.
So, as we discussed last time, my item on tap for show and tell was Carole King's 1971 classic Tapestry, which, you know, we discussed a little bit of the backstory and sort of the cultural impact in our personal relationships or lack thereof last time. Mm-hmm. Just a quick refresher. Mm-hmm. It's one of the best selling albums of all time. It is consistently, you know, ranked in snooty music magazine's top 100-ish albums of all time.
And it is absolutely, you know, like an album that if you knew Garden's tastes only from our show, then this was a complete, like, out of left field pick.
Yeah.
So, you know, somewhere in the pile of extreme metal, ambient drone music, and underground hip hop, I dug out a soft rock singer songwriter album from the early 70s, and it's been an interesting couple of weeks spinning this album. Mm-hmm. It's a short album because albums weren't very long back then. You couldn't fit them on the disc.
You had to kind of fit that 45-50 minute mark with vinyl mastering, because you can't really go much farther than that, or your grooves get too small. And I mean, it all really depends on how loud your album is, of course, which I won't go into it. I know a bit about vinyl mastering, but let's just say that that's probably why most albums are about 30 to 45 minutes from back then, is because of the mastering process dictated as such.
Yeah, the closer you get to the center of your vinyl, essentially the lower fidelity you're going to get, incidentally is why sides of vinyls, which I'm going to be talking about a little bit as we keep going here, are... They were sequenced in a certain way, which is why the music basically gets slower.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
As you go.
Yeah.
At least in terms of tempo.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure the quote unquote playback speed is relatively constant, or at least as close as you can manage on plastic. But they would always start off with sort of your fastest and loudest songs, and then you would kind of taper off downward as you got nearer to the end, most of the time anyway. There's exceptions you can find out there.
And for trivia, CDs read the opposite direction.
Ah.
Yep. And I think if you look at the underside of a CD, you can actually see the difference in shine.
Yep.
Where the data is stored.
You can actually tell, like, this is how I used to always know where, if an album had a hidden track, is you could actually see a gap if the time is over, like, 3 minutes or so, just kind of how the data is written. It usually takes about a 2 or 3 minute silence for that, like, the change or the stripe in the data to kind of be seen, where there's like a bit of a dead space and then there's more after the last track. That was something that idiot, like, dork ass Polly at like age 12 or 13 was like, look at this dumb thing I know. And everybody's like, the fuck are you talking about? Get out of here, you fucking dork.
I didn't know that. Now I'm gonna like whip out my CDs.
Go look at your CDs, and you can actually see it—the outer edge. If it's got a secret track, you will likely see the separation of data.
That's cool.
That also works if a CD has a data component as well. Like if you put it in a computer and it like does, you can also see that in the same way.
Yeah. Yeah, you see, audience, Polly was trying to spare you the technical details, but unfortunately for you, I also find them interesting. And besides, this is a sufficiently old album that I think, you know, talking about that kind of thing is important.
And I think
because as soon as the CD came out, this concept is pissed into the void.
And it will absolutely make sense when we start talking about this album in the way that it is sequenced. If we like look at it from the point of view of, yes, this is why vinyls are pressed the way they are, this is why songs are arranged the way they are, we will notice something about this album's flow that maybe doesn't 100% always work for me, but you know, we'll get there. We'll get there.
We'll talk about that. But first, of course, every album needs a track one.
Mm-hmm. It's the make or break
side
track.
One,
it's your make or break track.
Yeah, I mean, especially, you know, think of back in the day of when you could, you know, sample music in a store.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many of our listeners are old enough to remember this anymore.
You could put it under the you could put a barcode under the little light, put on the headphones.
There you went. Yeah. I would I miss those days. It was a local music shop I would go to. You just grabbed the CD or they had vinyl there as well, and you could just put headphones on and just vibe for a few songs and be like, "All right, I'm going to get it or I'm not." You know, and then I remember in Barnes & Noble, they had what you were talking about where you scanned the barcode, and I think it came up, and you could listen to a little bit there.
The very cool record store that I shopped at when I was young, Criminal Records, which, fantastic name. They just always had copies behind the counter and be like, "Hey, what do you want to hear?" It's like, and he would just like pop it out, throw it in the CD player, and run through some tracks for you. It was pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. Yeah, remember when cool stuff used to exist, guys?
Remember, like, when you could actually own things?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Remember when there was a magical place where you could test something out to see if you cared to own it?
This is a little off topic, but we talk about owning things. Mm-hmm. Like, so I'm super excited because Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection, a dream game for me, is going to happen. And I'm buying both copies for Switch and PlayStation. So I always have it physically with me. And I think it was like what Max Dude was saying. He's like, "So they can't take it away from us anymore.
They can't take it away from you anymore." This is like the podcast that's like, we are basically just showing you the apocalypse. We are your guide through the apocalypse. Like everything you know and love that's being taken away. We are here to talk about that, but also music.
Oh, strange, though. Yeah. They are. They're just, like, taking... I mean, it affects music. It's affecting, everything. Movies now.
Music, movies, games. Like, Sony does not want to press digital media anymore. So it's not digital, but physical media.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, Blu-rays.
We'll get back to Garden.
Check out scarecrowvideo.org. You can rent by mail. Anyway, we'll begin now. We're diving in... of the album that is Tapestry by Carole King, and our first song is I Feel the Earth Move. What do we all think about I Feel the Earth Move, our first track of the day?
I want PH to go. I feel like me and Garden, I think our takes here are going to be very similar. So I want to know, I think of all of these, I think we just let PH go first since he's the virgin.
Yeah, I am
Come
the virgin.
PH.
Come on, virgin daddy.
Yep, for sure. I had never listened to Tapestry. I know who Carole King was, but I was familiar, but not familiar enough. Just very shallow understanding. So this was my, Tapestry was
new to me. And this opening track is just absolutely rips. It's fantastic. It's just bouncing keyboards and pumping bass and just a god, like a it's so catchy.
Oh,
it's
god,
immediate.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is also a I don't know, it's just like what you would call a complete bop these days.
Yeah, like, this is bop, you know, bop top to bottom, basically.
Yeah, and like lyrically, it also kind of shows Carole King was, you know, kind of leading the way in expressing sexuality. From a female perspective that you didn't really have as much around this time, and it's kind of spicy. I read the I was kind of researching while listening to this record just to kind of get as much information as I could. Mm-hmm. And I read the 33rd and the third book that covers it.
Nice.
And you know, they were going into you know, this really the way the song is orchestrated is more like, you know, it's kind of like pretty much simulating her view of like the orgasm and and just, you know, it didn't hit me at first, but then I read that, I was like, oh yeah, that makes total sense, you know. Mm-hmm. but yeah, it's awesome. It's a fucking phenomenal first track. And yeah, I was like, oh yeah, I'm probably just gonna love this album. So yeah, immediate, just knocks it out of the park. You know,
just makes the statement
the go,
you want a track
from the
one
go
to make.
Yeah. So yeah, absolutely, just killer.
Yeah, like I mean, that's, you know, like this is one of my favorite opening tracks ever. It's just such a bop, instantly singable, instantly recognizable. There's just no way to not love this song, I don't think.
Yeah, no, it's, I actually took notes for this one, God forbid.
Look at you.
Yeah, so it is our groovy, upbeat pop single. It kind of makes me want to dance.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's not something Garden has ever said out loud, ever.
Probably not.
The first time you've ever heard those words come out of Garden's mouth, right here.
Yeah. But I think we're opening with what might be my favorite song on the whole album, tell you the truth.
I've got a kind of, there's another one that's kind of,
it's
like
awesome
in contention, but
yeah,
this is absolutely
would,
the track
it's a top
that I
five.
Think.
Yeah, is, it's a top five for me.
This is the track I think of when I think of this album. Like, it's the first one that comes to mind because it's just so immediately out the gate, like the star.
Yeah, and it, like, when it was released, it was a huge hit as well. Mm-hmm. And she still like performs this thing, like, you know, still kind of like a calling card kind of song. You know, it's just very defining tune for her. There's just plenty of live cuts of this. You know, you can see her kind of grow through time. Still playing this song.
Yeah.
And little behind the scenes info, Charles Larkey is the bass player on this album, and that's who she was romantically involved with for this album. So yeah, that the bouncing bass in there is, you know, probably related to the very spicy, you know, sexually charged vibe of this song. So yeah, it's if you said it was your favorite song, I totally get it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about with this one song.
Just
you can
this
you
one.
Can see a little bit. You can see a little bit of everything we're going to hear, which is Carole's voice is clearly the focus of, obviously.
So unbelievably soulful, so emotive. She projects so well, and even though you can hear like a little bit of bleed on her vocal tracks sometimes, it's never like offensive. Like, she's just got a very big character, like voice with a lot of character.
I find her voice really interesting because it is so soulful, and it's relatable, but it's almost like this, the way I put it, it's almost folk this doesn't feel like some big trained singer, you mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. but just that just happened to have an inherently likable, you know, like relatable, like this feels like someone I know singing yeah. at some yeah. local.
It's very she's bar very homey yeah. in a way that it's just so yeah, there you like. Go. Yeah. You know, I don't want to call somebody, you know, homely or homey in a way because it sounds bad, but
yeah.
it just sounds like no, like this sounds like somebody
it's personable.
That, yeah, it
very
makes
personable.
Her very personable. Like she doesn't seem like out of reach. She just seems so down to earth, despite having mm-hmm. this big voice mm-hmm. that is capable of expressing all of these big emotions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very big, like very simple emotions is what this album is kind of.
And we yeah. And we talked about the voice kind of being the focus.
Yes.
I did not listen to any of her other albums, but from what I understand, this album, like Lou Adler is the producer. Mm-hmm. And that was the intention was, I think the previous albums were maybe a little overproduced. So this mm-hmm. one was the focus was just like, no, let's make it more stark.
Yeah.
Let's just kind of make the voice front and centers, and that's really is the charm.
This is not a dense record,
right? Yeah, right.
But I do have y'all are leading into some of my notes here quite nicely. One of my things I wrote down was, remember when music was allowed to have imperfections like vocal breaks and
yes!
clear
yes,
distortion?
Yes, yes, there. Yes, yep, yes. Yep. Listening to this album again, that was one of the first things that I was just like, man, this would just, you know, people always say, well, they wouldn't let you make a record like that today, or they wouldn't let you do blah, blah, blah. Like
they literally wouldn't, though.
They literally would not let her be, like, they would suck all of the character out of her voice using so much studio, like, garbage. And it's just like, no, like, you're getting a very natural sound here. Like, it's got imperfections. Her vocal, like, you can tell that she's singing every line, and they're not just like, you know, copy pasting takes into like here's a chorus and we're just gonna paste that through the whole song. Like you can hear minute differences every time she sings the chorus. Like it's all of that stuff is very important to music feeling alive, and we do not have a lot of it these days.
Yeah, so because I'm a nerd, I had to look up some of this. That is an AKG D202 microphone, which for the non-musicians in the crowd, nobody wants that microphone because it was just a cheap dynamic microphone from the time, and it to me says that they may have even gone what was meant to be scratch takes on this record, but I don't know for sure.
Don't know for sure, but I could absolutely see it with the mentality that they went into wanting to produce a very natural sounding record. It would not shock me. I swear I read that one of these tracks is a demo. Actually, shit. I can't remember which one it was. I know. I think it might actually be the title track. Actually, I think that might actually be the demo take that they went with.
Okay.
I think I remember reading one of the tracks on this album is a demo take.
Yeah, I could think of one other one. I believe if it's not the title track.
Oh my god.
Probably that one.
because it's
similarly short and sparse.
Yeah.
But yeah, this album, it sounds like being wrapped in a blanket fresh out of the dryer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just in general.
Love it.
Yep, and it's very pleasant. So, we crammed a whole lot into one song. So I think it's time to move on, unless we have any parting shots on "I Feel the Earth Move."
Nah, I think we nailed that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll move on then to track number two, which is "So Far Away."
So far away, doesn't anybody stay in one place anymore? It would be so fine to see your face at my door. It doesn't help to know you're you're just time away. Long ago I reached for you and there you stood. Holding you again could only do me good. How I wish I could, but you are so far away.
Well, there we go, so far away. Psychic Heist. Let's hear from you first. Let's only hear from you first.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I mean, we can do that. So, this is one of the few tracks on this album I get a little self-conscious of talking about. Mm-hmm. Well, in general, I feel like throwing any kind of criticism on an album that is so this beloved. Uh-huh. Yes, this beloved, and this, you know, it's.
TH, they can't cancel us. We're not relevant.
Yeah, they can't cancel us. We're not relevant. Just go.
But I'm worried about y'all being like, all right, we're going to cut your ears off.
Throw that dirt, you know. Man. Throw that dirt. Let's go. Knives out. Gloves off. That's how we do here.
I think I would like So Far Away a lot better if it was, if it stopped at 3 minutes and around 3 minutes and 15 seconds. Yeah. There's a... There is about this kind of fluty outro that it hits me at first, you know, like when I like those opening chords, so far away, like you're like, okay, I'm in the moment, I'm getting reflective, I'm vibing, this is beautiful, and then it's about 3 minutes, I'm just, my mind is wandering. Now. That being said, I actually prefer the live version of this song from a BBC concert that was televised back in 1971. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, this is a very important track to Tapestry in general.
Yeah.
Because it basically... she wrote it when she was on tour with James Taylor. James Taylor is playing guitar on this track,
yep.
By the way.
He's playing the acoustics on most of this record.
Most of these songs, yeah. Yes. Yeah, he's all over this thing. We'll get more into that later, I'm sure, but Carole King and James Taylor are like besties.
Yeah.
They're like each other's muse. They were never like romantically... thing, but they were just always like inspired by each other. And this song is one of those that she wrote while on tour with James Taylor. And it was probably at the time, again, she was seeing the bass player of Charlie Larkey. Mm-hmm. So, on the BBC clip, it's really nice because you see both of them come and join her. To play the song.
Yeah, that would be like to see that chemistry like in the moment and to see kind of the expressions while they're
and
there.
And you feel it. Yeah. You just feel it. Like awesome. They're just all everyone's together. So I prefer that version to this album one. So there are other tracks on this album that, especially other ballads on this album that will speak to me a lot more. But I recognize that even though this isn't my favorite, I'm not really wanting to skip it. I respect it and I feel like this was the seed that would really get Carole King. 'Cause before this song, she composed songs, right? But she was never a lyricist.
Yeah.
And this song was when she was really starting to write her own lyrics. Mm-hmm. So before that, it was like her husband, I guess ex-husband by this point, was Jerry Goffin. And so...
Yeah.
He did a lot. They were a fantastic songwriting duo in the 60s. I feel like I can just go on and on giving you a history lesson here. But
there's a lot. Carole wrote a lot of songs.
There is a lot. Like this, is an iceberg that I had no idea existed. And it's been finding out about all this has been so enthralling and entertaining for me. But yeah, so that's the other thing to point out is that she never was like a lyricist until this album. And so this song is very important for that reason as well. Yeah. Kind of starting her, like, you know, I don't know singer songwriter is the right word, because she'd been writing songs, but the lyric part, you know, as well. So
her solo career.
Yeah. Yeah. But Garden, what do you think of this track?
So I can certainly see the argument that this song could be a little bit shorter than it is on this particular one. And maybe it's just because it's early in the album. I kind of don't care because I just like listening to Carol sing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And,
yeah.
And so, yeah, this is just, you know, there's a million songs like this, you know.
Yeah.
Love on the Road is a mm-hmm. fairly common concept in most music these days.
Yeah.
You know, think of this is like Carole King's Beth.
Oh God!
No, that's a joke. That's a joke, but it is.
No,
it
we're
is kind
it
of
on. That's going on. That is going on the packaging for any new runs of this album. Contains So Far Away, Carole King's Beth.
Oh, that is giving Beth way too much credit. But
oh God. That's giving any song by Kiss too much credit.
But yeah, I like it. It's not the, I don't have like a million things to say about this one compared to some of these other songs.
Sure. Yeah.
It does kind of set up the sequencing of events here to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Where you're
I was about to say this.
You're
is
gonna
sort
get
of where,
some stuff.
This is kind of where a loose concept, I think, begins to form on this record of love and loss and this is where that really starts.
So you're gonna. A lot of the songs are kind of single-minded in concept, I think, at least as far as the lyrics are concerned.
Sure.
It's going to start this sort of ping-ponging structure where you get some faster songs that followed by slower songs for now, but we'll get to that.
We'll get there.
But yeah, I dig this one well enough. What do you think, Polly?
I mean, I think we've all kind of covered it at this point. I hate fade-outs.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I'll add that to the pile. I hate fade-outs. This one almost gets there and not fading out because like the instrumental gets so light and airy and then it does the fade out then. I'm like, you could have just resolved it there. I didn't even mind the elaborate outro and the little fluty the little fluty instrumental you're playing around with there. You play with it, do it, do something, but you fade it out, man. It's a good song though. I like it. It's fine. You know, again, it's like Garden said. You know, get to listen to Carole King sing, so I'm not gonna complain too much.
It has a really nice romantic,
sure.
You know, kind of something I don't know, and I'm probably not looking for it. You know, to be fair, but something I feel like I don't really hear much in music. This is just kind of these moments where I'm just kind of where the songwriter is being more or less just pretty romantic, that's nice. I think that's real nice.
All right. Well, with all that out of the way, I guess we should move on to track number 3, and probably. In the signature track of this album and arguably of Carole King's entire career, it's Too Late.
Stayed in bed all morning just to pass the time. There's something wrong here, there can be no denying. One of us is changing, or maybe we just stop trying. And it's too late, baby.
So, that's It's Too Late, everybody.
You've heard that song. Even if you swear that you've never heard of Carole King, if you didn't even know the name of the song, you've heard this song. I don't care.
You know what? I probably have heard this song, but I could not. This would not be the song that I would say on this album that, like, I couldn't recall it. Mm. Is what I felt like I first experienced this song this year listening to this album, and I have heard it in other ways that it just never clicked with me, but I can be one of those. There's another extremely famous song in here that, you know, I would say is kind of the, you know, okay, that's
probably,
you know,
like,
that's the thing about this album.
You're dealing with a loaded album here. This thing's just right. Stacked. Right.
Yeah, so my notes are pretty brief on this one. I have one of the best pop songs ever written.
Yep. Not even gonna argue.
Perfect song.
I mean, what do you say about this song?
It's perfect.
It's phenomenal.
It's a perfect song. Yep, phenomenal. It's my favorite track on the album.
That's another good pick.
It is a fair pick.
Yep. Yeah, it features everything I love about this kind of music that was produced in the 70s. It's just like, especially like kind of that era of like, I don't know, like the Fleetwood Mac era. Just the warmth, the pop sensibilities. There's lovely improvised sections to it. Fantastic vocals are across the board now, but there's just some sort of sparkle and shine on this one that's a little bit extra that just really pops for me.
Yeah.
There's you know what it is? It's just this lovely, like, ascending and then descending, but it's like cradling too. But then it opens. I feel like a weirdo talking about how much I love this song. I just feel like it has the right amount of everything, and then plus that just extra factor, that
extra, shine extra there.
Magic. Yeah,
there's a little extra shine on this one where it's just like, you know that this is the single. Go ahead, shine that one up a little bit more.
Yeah. I love this one. Mm. I love this one to death. I just love this one.
Yeah, like, what do you say? Like, again, this is literally, like, it could be argued best fucking pop song of all time. Just, it's
fucking phenomenal. This is the bee's knees, man. Yep. I just love it. It's got such a badass groove. I think it's the groove.
Yeah, like, it's so groovy. It grooves so well.
Question for you. Polly, you're a percussionist. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about congas? Because that's congas in the beginning, right?
Like, yeah, that's congas. Like,
yeah, how do you feel about congas? Because I was
big fan.
I need more congas in my life.
Like, I feel like we could accent more tunes these days with congas. I think people are scared of congas. I think congas gets a bad rap. I think people think they sound cheesy, they sound tinny, they sound cheesy. It's like, nah, dog, seriously, if you work with congas, like, they sound great.
Someone needs to take up the conga again and, you know, make good use of it.
We just need more mixed percussion back in music in general.
Yeah, hear that.
Like, give me more congas, give me more bongos, let's just do it. Stop being afraid of congas and bongos, which I always get the two mixed up, so it's probably actually bongos in the opening.
Okay,
I'm a little dyslexic sometimes. I say the wrong word, and I'm thinking one word, but I say the other one.
These are congas, actually. Yeah.
Okay, I'm making sure. Okay.
I thought they were congas, yeah.
Okay, I'm just making sure. But yeah, bring, like, more bongos in music, more congas. Let your music have dynamics, people, but that's a whole other conversation.
Even if they're just featured, because mostly you're hearing it mostly here in the beginning.
In the beginning, yeah. You know. Like, just featured there. They make for great buildup.
It just sets the scene. It just sets, it's so important. Yeah. It's setting a scene up in a song, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, that's what they're so good at doing. God.
Yeah. We need more dynamics and more ghost notes.
Yes!
because we've grid aligned ghost notes out of existence, and it's making music sound like shit.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, you are. Oh my god, you're so.
This is just the, hey, remember how good music used to be?
That's literally what this episode's gonna be, is remember how good music used to sound.
Yeah, this isn't even, you know, my usual lane of music, but this is indicative of just about everything that's missing from almost all genres of music today. The freaking Zoomer. I was gonna say Zoomer TikTok brain rot, but frankly, it starts from my age down.
It really does. Yeah.
But yeah, that's It's Too Late. It's the least bitter breakup song of all time. it's one of the best songs ever made. And what else do we have to say about it? It's hard to talk about a song that it's like talking about the fucking Lord of the Rings movies or some shit, or talking about the Godfather.
What do you even say that is like that hasn't been said 8,000 times? It doesn't make you say like there's no new way to read this. You will run out of ways to read something because it's like it's all I can say.
Yeah, because we all have some kind of experience with it, except apparently Psychic Heist. Right.
So weird. It is weird, but yeah, I had an interesting childhood with music, so you know, I feel like I'm missing out, like, until I don't know.
Sure.
I started listening to stuff by myself by 15 years old, but yeah, I was very sheltered from stuff.
My parents were 80s rock kids.
Hell yeah.
So that was and they were always like genuine music fans. Like I saw something. Lucky. I saw something about I kept my CDs in a wallet in my car, which was the style at the time. And one of my older friends said, yeah, I used to hate how people threw away all the CD cases and album artwork and shit when they did that. I'm like, we never did because my parents actually value their things.
Yeah, I kept all that shit. Like all of my CDs are still packaged. I've still got everything original. I never got I've got the cases in storage, but like the CDs themselves and like the liner notes are in like little binders.
I've replaced a few jewel cases in my time because some of them have been destroyed.
Yeah. And it's always those ones like that are like two disc sets that are hard to replace.
Oh yeah, with the little fucking divider opens up and exposes the back cover paper.
Yeah, hated it. Like try to get a replacement for your fucking Nine Inch Nails Downward Spiral CD. That packaging was weird.
So, I mean, my CD copy of the Downward Spiral is the dual layer CD DVD one that has a 5.1 mix on the DVD side.
Mine is like mine is like the 93 release or something.
Well, there you go. All right. So, moving swiftly on, we're to our next slow, sparse ballad song, Home Again.
Sometimes I wonder if I'm ever gonna make it home again. It's so far and out of sight. I really need someone to talk to, and nobody else knows how to comfort me tonight. Snow is cold, rain is wet, chills my soul right to the marrow. I won't be happy till I see you alone again, till I'm home again and feeling right.
Are we home again, guys, or can we never go home again?
That's the question. The great question of our time, I suppose.
Good one.
So I think it's kind of funny that Psychic Heist said that he wanted So Far Away to be like a minute shorter.
You got it. Here it is.
Yeah.
Because here you go.
Yeah, like this is, this
I,
is,
and I prefer this one to So Far Away.
This is like part two of So Far Away, basically. I think this is real. I mean, thematically and like yeah. musically, I think this is, you know, the sister song to to So Far Away.
Yeah, I would argue that some of the lyricism on this one isn't quite up to the standards of the rest of it. Snow is cold, rain is wet.
Yeah, it's a little
little
simpler.
I mean, chills my soul right to the marrow is an interesting way of saying that, but otherwise
that's
it's
not
like
where the marrow's at, dear. Great singer songwriter, maybe not a biologist.
Yeah, we all know that the soul is stored in the back of the knee.
I thought that was the balls. No, that's where testosterone and pee are. Why do I think everything's stored in the balls?
They are nature's U-Haul.
That's a good
point. Testicles, nature's U-Haul. They will mark this episode as the one where we have all officially lost our minds.
Yeah, I think we've finally done it. On one of the most classiest albums ever, we're here literally talking about what's stored in the balls. Great. It's the one where PH so friends listen and go like, what are your friends on?
Well, PH, what thoughts do you have stored in your balls for home again?
All right, so what do my balls say?
I'm sober. Are... That's the funny part.
There are a lot of heavy hitters on this album. I don't think this is a song you're going to think about when you bring up Tapestry. But it's not. But that would almost say like, oh, it's straight up filler. And I can't quite put it in that category. I think
it's
it kind of works
step above filler.
I think it works as kind of like a bridge. Yeah. And you know, it's also it's the shortest song on here, I believe. Mm-hmm. 2 minutes and 29 seconds. So it gives you a nice little breathing room. You know, I think what I like most about it is like it can show you what you can do in a short song, and it still feels complete to me. Like I still get the overall arcing emotion out of it, especially when we get to the, you know, chills my soul to the marrow. Mm-hmm. We were discussing like she really sings into that, and it's also a point where I think you kind of hear things sort of bleed in her vocally bleeding, but it works. It's very emotive, and it's pretty raw sounding, and it kind of gives me a little chills. I enjoy it. So it's not going to be, again, a defining song on here, but I don't know. I like it. I prefer it a little bit more to So Far Away, and I think it's in a good spot on the album. So, yeah, I give it a thumbs up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm of the similar mindset. I think that this is just a nice bridge song. Lyrics are, the lyrics kind of...
Right, I think it's very valid.
Here, but yeah. Again, it's nothing offensive at all. It's a listenable song. It bridges you from It's Too Late into the next track. So I got no problem with this. Like, I there's not a track on here that I skip. You know, even if like I think that a song is maybe one of the weaker. You're talking about a weak track on an album that is just this, you know, this exalted. Right. I guess.
Yeah.
I will say that this is one of those. This is one of those albums where the front to back experience I do think is pretty solid, and I'm not going to say that I skip any of these.
Sure.
Right. But there are little there's sort of peaks and valleys in terms of songs that I enjoy to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And I like this one. It's short enough that it doesn't really get in the way of the flow. Oh. What could she be referring to? Who's gonna know?
Who could guess? We'll never know.
That or you'll know on side two. Anyway, yeah, I don't have much more to say about this one. I think we can move on. So track number 5. which is beautiful.
I have often asked myself the reason for the sadness in a world where tears are just a lullaby.
Beautiful, it's true. No, this is
oh,
not.
I'm listening
this is
to
not
the wrong
that,
album.
This is not that song. This is a different song called Beautiful. How we feeling? How we feeling now that we got a bit more of an upper song?
That reminded me of a memory. You unlocked a memory. When I was living in Edinburgh, Scotland, that song by James Blunt, Beautiful, was a huge hit.
Oh, no.
Oh, and, I'm so sorry.
And I was working at the Virgin Mega Store on Princess Street.
Oh, no.
And no, I actually loved it. I felt like I was around people who are,
yeah,
I
but mean, for we the were purposes all of this story.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is, we were dealing with all kinds of crazy public, you know, that's it's in Scotland as it is everywhere. And there was one time this one guy got really, really, really upset with me over something, over a price or something, mm-hmm. and his insult was, "Well, you look like James Blunt."
Jesus. How do you recover from that?
I remember just laughing.
Yeah, that's a real good one. I mean, I don't know how I would react to that. I think I would. I think the only one I got was like you look like Marilyn Manson if he was ugly, and I was like,
oh,
I mean, okay. Fuck. I just laughed because it's like the most, okay. Like, all right, I'll go with that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I hope that person's doing well.
They probably are.
I don't.
It was just
hope
the weirdest insult.
Them.
It was just the weirdest.
That's
insult.
Just a great insult, man. I don't like. That's the kind of thing is like you want to insult somebody. You want to leave them just like I don't insult people to make them feel bad. I want to leave them questioning what the fuck led me to that observation, and I want them to get real fucking irritated about it, and it just sticks with them, and they develop like an insecurity about it. Like that's the way I want to insult somebody.
Yeah, I feel like you want somebody to feel like they got roasted by Don Rickles or
yes!
something.
Nice. So back to the song.
So beautiful.
Beautiful.
Beautiful by Carole King.
Yeah. I guess I'll go here. I like this song just fine. Mm-hmm. I think I like, you know, I like the message in the lyrics, and yeah. I think it's got a really nice, positive, uplifting sort of, I guess, message is what I'm trying to
it's
say
an
here.
Uplifting song. It's an absolutely uplifting song, yeah.
And it feels like in the way that she sings it, it feels like it's like the cool family member that's trying to give you a pick me up,
yeah.
and they're just wiser, yeah. and they're very supportive of you, and that really comes across. But musically though, it just doesn't really speak to me, or even really stick to me compared to other songs.
Sure.
On this album, I mean, it's got an interesting rhythm going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just like, I don't, I could see this being somebody's favorite, mm-hmm. but it's just for me, it's just not there for me.
Gotcha.
Yeah. That's how I feel about it.
Polly.
I would say I. Oops.
Oh, no, sorry. Go ahead,
Polly. Someone.
You can go ahead, Gardner.
Okay. I would say I appreciate this song because it provides some contrast.
Yeah.
In terms of like tempo sure. and mood.
Yeah.
And it helps make the album play better. Mm-hmm. In a sequence of things. On its own, my notes are, if this song came out in 2024, I'd call it toxic positivity.
Absolutely, that's something that I absolutely kind of felt like you look at it in hindsight, and obviously I think it's coming from a good place.
I think the only way it gets away with it is just through Carol's delivery.
Sincerity. Like, there's just overall, there's just a lot of sincerity that's, in her voice.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's where it gets away with it. Yeah.
You can sell that. You can sell toxic positivity.
Carol's voice does a lot of heavy lifting on this record.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely, like, of the same mindset. Like, musically, it's just kind of, you know, it's not your brightest moment. You're not really, you know, trying to break through any walls here. You kind of, you got a real nice progression there. It's easily listenable. Sounds great. You got, you like, you listen and you love the positive message. It's just, you know, it's a song that's, and again, this is an album that kind of needs songs like this, because I feel like most of the heavy hitters are probably more ballady, but you can't do like all ballads. You can't do 8 ballads in a row. Nobody's sitting here for that album. Look, I love REM and I love Automatic for the People, but that is not an album that I just throw on all the time because
it's hard to get. It's hard to get through nonstop misery.
Yeah, like I don't want to sit there through abject misery. I don't want to sit there through slow tempos all the time. Like, I found out that in recent years, maybe slower songs, maybe I'm becoming a bit of a snob about slower songs kind of boring me sometimes. So
I'm trying to be very conscious about that, because I'm turning into Garden.
Yeah.
I feel y'all's influence on me, because I've felt that lately, where I'm like, the slower tracks are now tending not to be my favorites, and I'm just like, it's
like, can we like?
I don't remember having that problem. Yeah, I don't remember having that problem.
We're a really good influence.
Before, but I will say, the next song is a slow burn.
It's a slow burn, and it's a jam too. Yeah. But yeah, beautiful. Yeah, it's a good track. Yeah. I like this one. It doesn't wow me, and it doesn't blow me away. But it's also just like, you feel good anyway. You can feel good. It's fine.
Yeah. Again, it's in context. Beautiful works.
Yeah.
I'm not adding it to my Spotify like songs playlist individually anytime soon.
Not in 2024.
No. That being said, we got a little bit of a reference to it already, so I think we can say we're safe to move on to the side one closer, Way Over Yonder.
Way over yonder is a place that I know, where I can find shelter from a hunger and cold, and the sweet taste in good life is so easily found.
So, Way Over Yonder. For me, this was, having not revisited this album in quite some time, I think Way Over Yonder was my personal sleeper hit on this one.
Yeah.
So, but since Psychic Heist kind of teed it up for us already, let's hear what you have to say.
Second favorite track on this thing.
Valid. Yeah. Absolutely valid.
It to me, this closes out side one on the record, and it's just like a fucking mic drop moment of just fucking beautiful. Also, I want to give a shout out to Mary Clayton, who does the backing vocals on this. Does anybody know which famous Rolling Stones song that Mary Clayton is the star in?
Not a Rolling Stones fan, honestly, so no.
Oh, sorry.
Hold on, give me a second. I'm not the biggest Rolling Stones fan either, but I feel like you're asking this because it's obvious. Right. Is it Gimme Shelter?
It is Gimme Shelter. Perfect.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah. As soon as you say it, and like my brain just goes, oh, I hear it. I know.
Now you hear it.
Yep. Yep.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, this, and actually when I first listened to Tapestry, this was the first song that really like immediately just was, I was like, wow.
Grabbed you and shook you.
Wow. Yeah, this was the one. Like, It's Too Late, I loved, and over the next few listens, that kind of took the favorite spot, but this is like right underneath there. Yeah. And every time just leaves me breathless. It just knocks me on my ass. Mm-hmm. There's a gorgeous sax here.
Oh, I love the saxophone on this song.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's mentioned literally my notes for this song says soulful saxophone. What more do you want?
Yep.
This definitely has a more lush sort of presentation in terms of its ensemble than a lot of this album does.
Yeah. This is definitely they took a look at how this song was arranged and then looked at like how they were mixing this. And it's definitely, this song is an outlier in how this album sounds, I think, with regards to its mixing and how it's using the sound stage, because it's definitely set to be a bit more of an epic moment. And to close out your side one, obviously you gotta bring a heavy hitter.
Yeah. We're kind of making our criticisms with ballads and slower songs in the previous discussion. But to me, this is like, this is how you do it. This is how you do it. This is
Yeah, for sure.
This is everything you want out of it, but more. It's got that extra magic. It just, you hear it, you're transported, you're in the moment. I also, as someone who, was in a household that listened to gospel music, like old gospel music, it gave me a little bit of those vibes as well.
Yeah, this is very like hymnal,
yes,
in a way.
Yeah.
This is a song that is played at funerals sometimes. So
I could see that.
Yeah. I've heard this song played at funerals. So
yeah. So another great fucking knockout of a track. Just amazing. Yeah. Got nothing else to say. Every time I listen to it, I'm stunned.
Pure unbridled soul. Like it's I think it's like truly uplifting. I think that it's a song that my interpretation of it is this is a song to what it feels like to be on the start of your journey toward feeling better. I think that it's a song. It's like it's a song that quietly acknowledges being in the worst of it, but like wherever yonder, which is where you're going to be, things are going to be better. And I think that's the meaning that I have pulled from that song since I was a child. That's one of those comfort songs that I've always kind of come back to over the years. It's just like, things might be crap right now, but way over yonder,
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that just speaks so broadly to everyone.
Absolutely.
That's just like a, I don't know, just almost comment on
going back to the
just the hope
here.
The hope, yeah, exactly, the fucking hope that you need to have, especially in God
times like these.
Yeah, absolutely. So Garden, you got anything else to say about this?
I think we covered it pretty well. This is a good one. This is one of those. This is an album where the heavy hitters kind of smack you so hard that you forget some of the missteps a little bit as you're going through it.
Yeah, it really is. It really do be like that.
So, yeah, this is, we're ending side one. we're hearing the needle slide over the blank groove, and we're going over to flip the disc.
Yep.
So it's time.
And I can do that because I have this on vinyl.
I discovered I do too.
What?
We inherited my mother-in-law's vinyl collection.
Crazy! You just dug through it and was like, "Holy shit!"
Well, I talked to her. I said, "Hey, I'm gonna be doing Carole King. You know, you grew up during that time," and she just lit up. She's like, "I love that album. You have that album?" And I was like, "I do." And I went and looked. It's fucking like she must have played that thing so fucking much because like the cover is faded.
Oh hell yeah! It's what my dad's looked like a little too. Bit.
Yep, yep.
Yep. The gatefold is like a little flimsy and now.
And you know it meant something to her because she wrote her fucking name in there.
Oh, like, man.
Yeah.
There you go. Not losing that one.
On that one.
She ain't losing that one.
Yeah. So, I actually have it on display.
That's
on
awesome.
On top of my player
Hell
at the moment.
Yeah. I don't have this one. Although, when my mom's older sister was keeping her shit at our house for a while, this wasn't a crate somewhere in my house.
Gotcha.
My brother totally appropriated that copy of Dark Side of the Moon I was talking about a couple episodes ago.
Oh, oofa doofa.
Because he hit a certain point in college, and all of a sudden he got like way into Pink Floyd.
Oh, yeah.
It happens. So. Yeah.
All right. But we're flipping the disc. We're starting side two with a song called You've Got a Friend.
I bet most people looked at this track listing and thought that that's what this song was.
Yeah.
Nope, it's the one James Taylor sang after this.
James Taylor sang, but Carole King wrote it.
Yep.
We've already referred to Mr. Taylor on here a couple of times.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's an instrumentalist and a backing vocalist on the record, and they were friends for ages. Is James Taylor still alive? I have no fucking clue.
I believe so.
Yeah, he might be.
I believe James Taylor is still alive. Yeah.
That's cool.
I feel
Let's see. He's still alive.
Yeah.
I don't want to bury a guy before he's dead.
Yeah, I feel like I would know because his music meant a lot to my mother-in-law, played his records all the time, and that informed my wife's, music background. So, yeah, I think I would know the day that may not happen anytime soon.
Hopefully not. Yep.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So you got a friend.
That being said, not the biggest fan of this song, actually, especially as the start of side two. It's too slow. I don't like it as much as Way Over Yonder.
I don't know. I think this one's okay. I don't mind this one being where it's at. I don't think that it's as okay. It is. It's not up tempo. I'm not gonna call it up tempo, but I don't think it's like a dirge or anything, right?
No. But you know, I would have preferred something more. I think even sequence-wise, if you flipped these first two songs around, it probably would have been better.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's something about this one doesn't click with me.
I could see side two starting with track eight, yeah. But I like this song. I think it's just... this is another one of those songs where it's just like, I don't know that I have a lot to say about it other than that I like it and that I think it's just, you know, a positive, uplifting song about just knowing you got friends. And I think in the world of 2024... I don't know that there's a song that's more relevant in a song.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Like, I think you, more than anything, like, I am that person that's just, like, poking people every now and again just to say, hey, you know, just poking you to say, hey, you got a friend over here if you need it. Just letting you know. And, yeah, this song's just, you know, it's just that. It's a good sing-along live. I've seen a lot of live performances of it.
Oh, yeah.
Crowds just sing along, and it's just like, yeah, it's...
To me, this is the hit. Like, this is the hit of like what I immediately knew from this record was this song. I think of this as the heart of the album. I think of this song as like the sun where every other song just sort of orbits it. Like, to me, it's the centerpiece. I think it just, if you were to play someone a Carole King song, like, this to me would be probably the best sort of representation of that, where I think you get her personality, why she's so likable and personable, and while it can make you emotional, and why it can speak to you in the way like you believe it, like, yeah. Oh, you've got a friend, like, there's no bullshitting here, you know, like, and yeah, I think the James Taylor version was huge, and
it won a probably, Grammy,
I'm pretty sure it was his biggest hit.
Yeah, it's his biggest hit. I think that won a Grammy.
Yeah. I believe it did. She pretty much had written the song with him in mind, as it was a response to an early James Taylor song, Fire and Rain, where he's saying, I've seen lonely times where I could not find a friend.
Yeah.
So Carole King's like, shut the fuck up.
I got you a bit. This is like the anti-diss track.
Yeah. You got a friend right here. And I think this is a song that is powerful in the sense that it can be from a parent to a child. Mm-hmm.
Friends to friends, to your lover.
Yeah, exactly. So
it covers all the bases.
It's not my absolute favorite of the album, but I think that to me this is like, okay, this is the rock. This is the thing that really pins it all together. That being said, it makes sense when I listen to the album. In this case, I listened to most of this album digitally. It feels more, it makes more sense to me that it's in the placement that it is. However, if I was to flip the record over and start with this one, and you already have that Way Over Yonder, because to me it's a knockout. It's a 1-2, like, bam, bam, heavy hitters. Like, there you go, with Way Over Yonder in this one. Having that space in between, I think, I could see that where, I don't know, it's not as, maybe not, it, I, there's, Way Over Yonder kind of speaks to you in a, like, that just deep, soulful way that you know, and this one's just seems, it's a little bit more light, I guess.
It's a little more airy, it's less...
Airy is what I'm looking for.
It's
here.
Definitely lighter, it's a lighter sentiment. Still, like, you know, it's still an important sentiment, but I think it's lighter than what wherever Yonder is going for sure.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a reason it might not click as well for me, maybe me and Garden, is that, like, I know that for me anyway, that, like, a lot of my experience with this album for years was, again, it was part of my dad's vinyl collection, so I just listened to it growing up and flipping it over. So, you know, like, I can see, like, yeah, I think going from that to that does feel a little awkward, and I would maybe move the next track up and this one down one, so, yeah.
I can't wait till we talk about the next track, then.
I think we're moving on to Where You Lead.
Wanting you the way I do, I only want to be with you, and I would go to the ends of the earth, 'cause darling, to me that's what you're worth. Where you lead, I will find.
So I'm just going to get this one out of the way. Yes, they re-recorded this song for the intro to the show, The Gilmore Girls, a show I've never watched.
Oh, right. I never would have known that because I never watched The Gilmore Girls. Wait, wasn't Sebastian Bach on The Gilmore Girls? I think he's like, that's one of his weird claims to fame, is I think Sebastian Bach was on Gilmore Girls. I don't know why I know that. I don't know why I'm even thinking. Now I got to know.
I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I know John Bon Jovi was on Sex and the City.
Yeah, okay. Sebastian Bach was on Gilmore Girls.
Interesting. But yeah, I guess spoiler alert, I like this one. It's not in terms of the more upbeat type of songs, I don't think it's as good as like I Feel the Earth Move, but I dig this one quite a bit. It's nice and up tempo, and it's not as schmaltzy as something like Beautiful.
Yeah,
but you know, I appreciate this one. I may have my own issues with the sequencing of events here on this one, but I did like this song a lot on critical revisiting,
yeah,
as something other than that, oh, that song I hear come on before that show my family members watch.
PH,
what did you?
I think this is my least favorite song on the record. I like it.
Least favorite track on an album of this caliber is still not saying this is the fucking dog water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, it sort of like expanding that point is like, I don't know, this came to me about the 10th listen of this album where I was just like, you know what Tapestry reminds me a little bit of? Thriller. Because you have songs like Where You Lead or, you know, Home Again.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, those are good songs, you know, or it's like when you listen to Thriller and you're like, you know, Baby Be Mine and the girl is mine. Yeah, they're good, the off songs.
Like there's not, the singles and then there's, not,
yeah.
there's the off
they're
songs.
Not the title track, yeah. Right? They're not Billie Jean. They're not, you know, Beat It, right? They're not like these defining, like when you think Thriller, that's where you go.
Yeah, like that's. This is that same caliber. Yeah, this is fucking Thriller. Yeah.
So, you know, I do like the song, but I just feel it's something sort of the way it just has always felt kind of awkward to me after You've Got a Friend for some reason. It seems to cheapen is not probably the right word, but it's the word I'm going to go with. Mm-hmm. Like it just I feel like we've had really direct sort of personal moments on this record. I feel like just about every song, I feel like she you can feel her either like it feels like she's singing to you, mm-hmm. or she feels like she's singing to a friend or to a lover. But this one feels the less personable to me. This one's more I don't know. It doesn't have that kind of directness that I get from the other tracks. So, yeah, it's a snappy pop tune for sure. Mm-hmm. Now I do wish she kept so she didn't write the lyrics to this one as much. Well, she collaborated with Tony Stern.
Yes.
Who actually died this year, by the way.
Yeah, actually. Shit.
Mm-hmm.
Bad year, man.
Yeah, it's been one of those years. But the original lyrics was that she had written was, "If you want to live in fucking New York City, honey, you know I will." And I was like,
yeah,
that would have been cool.
That would have probably hit a little more personally. I think that would have made it feel a little more down to earth.
Yeah, but Carol's like,
nah, we can't do that.
This is also features Mary Clayton on the backup vocals, and they're fucking wonderful. They're just so good. So, there are things I do enjoy about this one. Mm-hmm. It's just I find it an awkward song compared with everything else.
I got you.
Yeah. Well, this is coming out for a live release on Columbia Records, so you can't say hell or shit or anything like that. I'm sorry. That's immediately what popped into my mind. Would have also have been a good choice for this episode, actually.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I said everything I wanted to say about Where You Lead already.
Same.
So let's move swiftly on to the album's big Joni Mitchell feature and backing vocals with Will You Love Me Tomorrow. Love Me Tomorrow after this one. This is my least favorite song on this record, and I can't even explain why.
It's just kind of, for me, this is just that song that's just kind of there. Like, it's just,
yeah.
And it's not, like I think that it's just like maybe one or two steps from being offensively boring to me, but it's just like, I mean, lyrically, I dig what it's going for. I the idea of like, that trepidation of giving yourself to someone and wondering like if that's all they wanted from you and all of that. But just in terms of like the overall song itself, it just kind of like lays there like a dog turd in the front yard, maybe.
Yeah.
Wow. I just gotta, look, man, everybody else has been super classy, so I've got to come around and poly it up a little bit. No.
We were talking about things stored in balls, and you think there's anything classy about this about this podcast? But yeah, I won't say that I hate it, but I would say that this is the closest thing I have to a skip on this record. It's a little too slow, it's a little too long, and it's a little too other songs on this record do this better.
Oh,
what do you think, Psychicist?
Well, this was another one that I was familiar with, and I'm actually more familiar with the. So this is at this point, a little history lesson. So this was actually one of the very first songs that Carol King and Jeffrey Goffin wrote together back in 1961, I believe, and it was for the girl group. The Shirelles.
Wow.
if you're not familiar with that version of the song, because you're talking like, oh, this one's kind of slow and meandering, you should listen to the Shirelles version, and was actually a pretty controversial song when it was released, because
it is talking pretty blatantly about sex.
Yeah, and it's very also on the Shirelles.
Also, the Shirelles were an all-black
group. So, female sexuality on top of black female sexuality in the 1960s.
Before the hippie movement. This is before the hippie movement.
Before the civil rights.
Yeah, before the Civil Rights Act. Yeah.
That too. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
In the midst of the movement, but before the law.
Yeah.
Yep. So this song is the first
number one by a black girl group.
Yeah. This song is famous as fuck. It is very. It's to me, it's one of the. You know, I would put it as one of the best songs ever written. It's very important historically, right?
So
it was banned in some parts of America.
I'm not surprised.
The version here on Tapestry, I think, is more in line with just kind of the mood and the vibe of the album. Mm-hmm. I like it. I like the contrast between the Shirelles and King's version. I think the Shirelles kind of is a little bit more of like a young love, take, right? It's more of a, you could even take it as far as like, I might say lose my virginity to you. Sure. Are you still, going to be with? And I feel like the Carole King version, which I appreciate, is that it's more like, hey, now I'm willing to be vulnerable with you, but you better not fuck me over. And so that's what I get from it. And I feel like it just has a nicer, like, I don't know, it's just kind of that more wise, just I've grown up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And talking about vulnerability with someone in a way that, I don't know, it just kind of makes sense with, I don't even know what I'm trying to say here.
Lost in the sauce sometimes.
I got lost in the sauce, yeah. So that's really where I'm coming from. I do like this very. I'm surprised that y'all are kind of like, hey, this is my least favorite cut on this, because to me this song is just like,
yeah, I understand its importance. Yeah, but it's just this version of it just doesn't speak to me.
Yeah, and I've never heard the Shirelles version.
Yeah,
well, my grandma, she was always listening to like 50s, 60s, like that era, like not when the hippie stuff started.
Sure.
Not when Bob Dylan was like, hey everyone, there's this thing called marijuana, changed the whole thing, right? But so I heard this one a lot. I've heard this one a lot. So it was just one was like, oh Carole King wrote that, cool.
This is the power of arrangements, kids. This is what musicians are talking about when we keep saying that word.
Yeah. I get a lot of questions about what do you mean arrangement, and I have to kind of go over this with people, especially in studio when we're talking about like, okay, what's your arrangement? What are we going for here? And I have to explain to them what arranging means, and oftentimes kind of got to do it for them.
I like this cut. I like this cut of it. I don't think I have anything else to say.
Well, I'm leaving this episode with homework.
Same.
So, but if Polly has nothing else to add, I think I'm gonna throw to Smackwater Jack.
Now Smackwater Jack. Shotgun, 'cause he didn't think about the noose. He couldn't take no more abuse, so he shot down the congregation. You can't talk to a man with a shotgun in his hand.
So it's funny, I've already made a Johnny Cash reference on this recording, because Smackwater Jack kind of gives me that sort of,
oh yeah,
you know, honky tonk gunfighter song sort of vibe.
This one sticks out like a sore thumb on this album in a good way.
It really does. In the best way. Yeah. In the best way.
This is like folk rock, folk country. Like, this would not be out of place on, like you said, Johnny Cash, Jim Croce. Like, it's just, this is entirely my wheelhouse. Like, I love songs like this, especially songs that are like, you know, storytelling. Like, a reason I'm a big Jim Croce fan is because he was an incredible storyteller in his music. Smackwater Jack is literally a story song. So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. This, it feels like it should be on a Fallout soundtrack.
Yes!
Right?
Absolutely.
I can see that. Yep.
It's about 20 years too late for the aesthetic of a Fallout soundtrack, but it is that kind of vibe, I feel.
Yeah, for sure.
And I actually dig this song a lot. This
love
one's fun.
Love this song. Yes. It's so fun. Yeah.
I love it, too.
He shot up a church.
Shot down the congregation. Woo!
Yeah.
PH!
Yeah. No, I think the power of this song is the fact that it is kind of the odd man out, with everything else on the record. Just has, like, everything else has like a theme. They kind of like link together in ways that make sense. And this is just like, no.
Here's an intermission.
But, you know, I think it's a wonderful intermission. It's a wonderful detour. I'm down with it 100%. I just, it's really fun. You know, like, how can you not just love about, I don't know, singing about like a shotgun dude named Smackwater Jack. He's about to get the noose, you know. It's just really badass.
So good. And
when it comes, you know, and it's just from, it's unexpected.
Yeah, like you listen to this album that is full of love songs and longing and pining, and then it's literally, here's a song about a dude that fucking shot down the congregation.
And it's, I think it's a good way to show that this is a something of a lightweight song, relative like in vibe, but it can be just really, just still hit you, you know, just really just stick with you. I mean, it was so good that fucking Quincy Jones made it the title of his record that would be released later that year in October.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious to listen to the Quincy Jones version now.
Yeah.
Not gonna lie.
God, that's something I need to do. I didn't check it out, but yeah,
homework,
it's
again.
More homework. But yeah, you know, I think that kind of shows you that even the songs on this record that are kind of the odd ones were still fucking influential even at the time.
Yeah,
like Quincy Jones is like, fuck, that's my title track. That's my album right there.
Yeah, I think there's something on this album that'll speak to just about everybody. Yeah,
for sure.
Which is one of the big accomplishments of this record. I think that about covers it. It's one of the shorter songs. Well, actually, I say that it's actually one of the longer songs on this record, but it feels like one of the shorter songs on this record.
Yeah, like it just kind of goes by in a breeze, right? Like it's just very breezy.
So
like,
damn entertaining.
I love songs like that where you can actually just like it's like a 5 or 6 minute song, something, but it's like, man, that was like 2 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Love songs like that.
Yeah, it just breezes by. It's a very tight little song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I think we could move on then. We're nearing the finish line, but first we find ourselves on the title track, Tapestry.
My life has been a tapestry of rich and royal hue, an everlasting vision of the ever-changing view. it's woven magic in bits of blue and gold. A tapestry to feel and see, impossible to hold. Once amid the soft silver sadness in the sky, there came a man of fortune, a drifter passing by. He wore a torn and tattered cloth around his leathered hide, and a coat of many colors, yellow, green on either side. He moved with some uncertainty, as if he didn't know just what he was there for or where he ought to go. Once he reached for something golden hanging from a tree, and his hand came down empty. Soon.
All right, what are we? We're talking about the title track. This is one we were speculating earlier might have been the demo that was left on.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I love this song to pieces. I just, yeah. This is one of those songs that just kind of melts me as a person. Like, this is my warm blanket. Just like curl up and just kind of think about life sometimes, and that's literally like what the song is. It's literally just about the tapestry of life and you know, the beginning, middle, and end, I suppose.
Yeah, it is. It's a little more couched in metaphor than Smackwater Jack, yeah, but I would also file this one under sort of like a folky storytelling sort of song.
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely a beginning, middle, and end to the whole. Like the little mini narrative that's being shown here. Yeah, absolutely.
And this is one of those. This is another one of the more spare productions on the record. This is one of the ones that's mostly just Carole King at a piano.
Yeah. Which is why I'm pretty sure this is the demo.
Yeah. So, and it's definitely got that. It's definitely got like a very bare and vulnerable vibe to it.
Yeah.
And I definitely dig this song too. Yeah. I think this is a really good one. Mm. PH.
You know, this was one of those songs that I realized as much as I listened to this album, this is the one I kind of slept on the most. Like I always felt like it went from Smackwater Jack to you know, what's the last track on this album, and I was like, oh yeah, this one, I couldn't, it was actually difficult for me to recall. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because it's musically it's pretty straightforward. You have you know, every other song is kind of follows that traditional format of you know, here's our verse, here's our chorus, here's our bridge, you know, just your typical kind of pop song or ballad format. And this one's kind of like the focus needs to be on the lyrics. And so I had to like hyper focus, and then when you do that, you find that this is, you know, probably one of the, well, it, not one of the, it is the darkest sort of song on the record, because it's so fucking melancholy in a way. We discussed kind of like just, you know, the passage of time and life, you know, just different phases through life. And so, you know, I like the imagery. I feel like there's a lot, for interpretation here. You know, you've got like, she's encountering this man of fortune who tries to reach for something, they couldn't get it, she's trying to comfort them, and they turn into a toad, you know, and then like it kind of ends with this figure of death, this man in black, you know, that's basically like calling her name. It just gives me that, some another interpretation I have is like that kind of sometimes maybe
youthful optimism that we have, mm-hmm. you know, when we're younger. You seem to be more optimistic about the world, and then it's kind of like the weight of the world slowly sort of just presses on you. So it's kind of a bummer in that sense. And it's very I find it very, very powerful, and I like the imagery and of it. So part of me wonders, like, what if you just close the album?
I think that this is absolutely the better closing track. 255% This is the better closing track.
Yeah. I was toying with that idea of just like, what, you know, this feels like the way you send it off. That being said, it's not like our closing track isn't like crowd pleasing.
Sure, but, absolutely.
But maybe that's a thing, right? Like, our closing track is crowd pleasing. This is not a crowd pleasing song in that sense, right?
Yeah.
This is I say for me probably the one that was the most. It took a time for it to kind of grow on me, but yeah, it has become one of my favorites. Just where I had to like, oh no, I need to sit down with this, and I need to think about this, and I need to kind of
live with it for a little bit.
Yes.
Kind of let it work its way into the old brain meats.
Right. Yep. So yeah. Good. Good shit.
Absolutely.
Good shit. And now I think it's time we close this one out by spinning over to our closing track, which is, of course, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman.
When my soul was in the lost and found, you came along to claim it. I didn't know just what was wrong with me till your kiss helped me name it. Now I'm no longer doubtful of what I'm living for, 'cause if I make you happy, I don't need to do more. You make me feel, you make me feel, you
So yeah, you gotta love Carole King. Let's just cram some of the best pop songs ever written.
Ever.
Two or three of the best pop songs ever written.
I'm literally a master.
Absolutely.
This is just me flexing. Here's three of the most widely known pop songs that have literally endured like 50, 60 years.
Yeah. She's like, hey, remember when I wrote this and Aretha Franklin sang it a long time ago? Well, here's how I would have.
That Aretha Franklin version, though.
That version, though.
Woo.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
This is a song that was written.
that's Aretha Franklin, though. Like, the fucking vocal queen.
Yeah.
You know?
This was specifically written for Aretha Franklin. So.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, this.
All that said, I do think Carol does a fine enough job.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And
she
makes
a
complete sense in the context of everything.
Yeah, in the context of this album, this song sits nicely and does what it's doing. Like, even if you try to compare it to the Aretha Franklin version, it's just like, well, it's two entirely different things. Like, they're going for something entirely different. Like, this is much different and functions as part of a whole in such a different way than the Aretha Franklin version. So, like, I don't even compare the two in my mind. I like them both. So, like,
Well, it's similar to, for me, it's the similar thing that Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow brings to the table. Like, you know, you've got the really famous version that came out first, but then you have Carol's take on this album that makes more sense within the context of that. And this one, like, I feel like Aretha, the Aretha Franklin version, it almost feels like, I don't know, it's it's amazing, but it doesn't feel quite as personal as the, it doesn't come off as personal as it does just through the production, right?
I think it's this the production. Like, there are two different types of vocalists.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, and like, I, you know, Carol, like I'm on the piano and I feel like I am singing. In this case, it was probably directly to Charlie Larkey, you know, like it's just like you feel that, you see that. It's like a scene out of a movie and this is the closer and everyone's like, yeah, Tapestry, you know, after, you know, the curtains fall.
Yeah.
So, it's again, it's one of those like, it's one of the greatest fucking songs of all time.
Yeah, like one of the greatest songs ever. Once again, attributed to Carole King's pen.
And like a lot of every other track on this, you know, album, it's just, it's another one that's just been covered a bazillion times.
This is one of those songs that has been permanently tattooed onto the face of pop culture.
Yeah, you're never getting rid of it.
You know, it's almost like, it's like talking about It's Too Late. It's like, what the fuck do you say about Natural Woman?
Yeah, like it's like, this is a song that has literally been covered by everybody. It is famous in commercials. Like there is nothing that you can like do or say about this song at this point. Yeah. There's just like, oh, you know, it's just, this is just her own take on it that works within the context of what this unique piece of work and this set of songs is doing. This song fits in here.
Aunt Selma sings this to her pet iguana.
Yes.
Nice.
Look, my psyche is like 90% Simpsons and Star Wars references. But yeah, it's one of those things. It's like, yeah, the fuck do you say about this song other than no, it is actually that good.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So I think if we have nothing else, that'll do it.
Look at
us, we're talking about one of the greatest albums of all time, and we're on the other side of it now.
Yeah, we made it through.
I was actually really intimidated. Again, it's something about talking about a classic
like
album.
I'm a fucking goober, dude. What do you want me to do? What am I gonna say about this?
Yeah. And like, even if I didn't like a classic, I'd still be like, I don't know. Like, I just don't know any. I don't know any better.
I'm not smart enough to appreciate this.
Yeah, yeah. But I would just like to say thank you, Garden, for presenting this one. It has been delightful. I feel like it has just enriched. It does link up to, you know, when I picked the Mandy Moore release, you know, and of course there's no fucking comparison there.
No, but, obviously not.
But what I'm saying, like even to this day, this album is kind of like what a lot of, you know, singer-songwriters are going to be drawing from.
Sure.
Just also really important for its era, because, you know, while Carole King is making this album, like down the road, James Taylor is making his album. And then across from that, Joni Mitchell is working on Blue,
all of this stuff is just in this proximity.
It really started the singer songwriter, especially, you know, for the female artist at the time,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Because, you know, I think of like, okay, we know Bob Dylan influenced so many people, you know, kind of from the 60s or, but it's just like, really, like for the second wave of singer-songwriter, where finally, like, again, a female songwriter could have their voice out there in a way. Like, this is like, the big Tapestry's like that big battleship just charging through, leading the way, you know. And of course, and then yeah, later on in that year, Joni Mitchell would release Blue. I mean, 1971 must have been just like if we did a podcast back then.
Can you imagine music like being alive for music in 1971? It's just kind of a banger a year if you were into a specific style of music.
Yeah, yeah. And it was very at that time, right? Very just refreshing. And, you know, because we're kind of getting out of the hippie era and, you know, people are growing up a little bit. And but it's not, I don't know, the production on these records gives a warmth and, and a sincerity that I find is definitely lacking these days.
It's all on tape. Like, there are people in there cutting tape with razor blades, stitching takes together, like... Yeah. That is that is a skill.
A lot of sanitization, you know, done in the sound, you know, just making it kind of clean and you know, just, so yeah, this was a fucking banger. And you know, again, I may not like not the word. I may not be in love with absolutely every track, but that's like there's so many fucking hits on
this
thing.
The whole whole record is never torn down or ruined by any of its weakest moments. They're just there's like at worst they're just kind of there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like and that's never, you know, it's never going to kind of like this kind of album where you have so much consistency and so many really really memorable great songs that have endured over the years. That's not going to be such a big deal if you've got a couple on there that maybe just kind of are content just being a song and nothing super special.
Yeah, no, it's a little I would almost call it somewhat spottier than I remember, but on balance it is a heavyweight fucking album.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that'll do it.
I guess
been lovely having the both of you.
You know what this means on the next episode.
On the next episode.
I think it means it's Polly's turn.
Someone we haven't heard from talk about their album in a while.
Haven't done this
like their choice. Yeah.
Like, and it's just like the fact that like you two have done like singer songwriter records, it's just like, well, I could go along with that, or I could just buck the trend and just take a complete left turn into brick wall.
Polly, this is you. I'm expecting like we're fucking throwing a Molotov cocktail and that, you know, like no, here you go. So I'm very curious on when we get to it. What inspired? Because something inspired you to get in contact with us about what would be kind of this sleeper, this thing that you would be surprised that I like.
You know, I never really had one in mind when I thought of the concept.
I see. I pictured you just kind of listening
like,
some quote
to this
unquote
album.
Guilty pleasure.
No,
and you're just like you know what.
No.
What
if we did a podcast about this, you know, or this idea?
Yeah.
No, it was never like that. Like, because one, I don't believe in guilty pleasures. Like, if I like something,
shame.
Yeah, I have no shame in anything that I enjoy. But no, I thought of the idea. Like, I was watching. I don't even remember what it was now. It was a cartoon, and there was like a show and tell. I'm trying to think of like what cartoon I was watching that. It wasn't an anime. It was a cartoon I was watching on like Boomerang or something at like, you know, 5 a.m. getting ready to go to work. And it was just like, there was like this show and tell thing. I was like, a show and tell's kind of like, we kind of did that with the ALC back in the day where somebody would just be like, hey, here's an album. Like, let's talk about it. But it was just like, what about like this added layer of like, you've got to like think a little bit. Because the next theme that we're going to be doing, like I'd had that one in the back pocket for a long time too. I just, you know, like I'd had that actually written down in a text file. I still had the text file that idea is written down in, just sitting there on my C drive. But yeah, like I didn't really have an album in mind when I was like, hey, like here's an idea for a podcast.
That's crazy. I just imagine you were listening to something like this would just
freak
shock
people
them.
Out.
Yeah.
No, dude. There was literally no, like, I had nothing in mind, which is like, I'm glad I wasn't the second one chosen because I still hadn't really, like, what's the curveball? What's the angle? But now it's just like, okay, I think I've got a couple of leads now. So it probably won't be long until I like ding you guys like, hey, I got it. Like we're gonna do the first episode.
I'm excited.
We'll see. I've got a couple in mind. I'm not gonna listen to either of them. I'm just gonna kind of like look at the. I've got them on vinyl. I guess is the only hint I'm gonna give you. But if you don't know my vinyl collection, that really doesn't help you at all, does it? But I know I'm just gonna sit there and I'm gonna look at both of them for a couple minutes, and I'm just gonna be like, "It's this one," and then I'll just ding you.
All righty. Sounds like a plan.
Well then, Garden, thank you so much for taking hosting duties. Thank you so much for letting us review such an amazing album. If you were anyway more of a music expert than us, and you sat through and you listened to us talk about this album, I'm sincerely sorry.
There's that too, the legacy of this album. So
this album has a legacy that precedes itself, and it's just like, I was just kind of like, God, I'm gonna talk like the biggest goober about this stupid album. I'm done. I'm toast. But yeah, this was a great time. We will be back probably sooner than you think with the reveal for my pick. Like I said, I'm down to a couple that I'm thinking about and just throwing out. And just be like, all right, we're just going with this one. I got to probably do a little research on the background to kind of like get some things down. But yeah, I would say maybe a week or two we could probably get to that. The unveiling, I suppose. Garden, where can the fine internet folks at home find you if they'd like to get in touch or want to see what you're doing?
Well, you can usually find my music at soundcloud.com/Western Desolation. I'm also in the Socks Make People Sexy Discord. I don't feel like moving from SoundCloud to Bandcamp yet, but it will happen eventually because I think SoundCloud's audio is actually kind of trash.
Oh, getting bad, huh?
I've done a back and forth between like the song that I hear in my DAW and the song that I hear in SoundCloud.
Oh no.
And I think to myself, SoundCloud sounds different somehow. So I don't think SoundCloud impresses me in how long it's managed to stay alive.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know.
I use SoundCloud as much as I used to. Bandcamp is
kind of like where I'm at. I think it's just a neater interface for albums. It's easier to just kind of digest and enjoy albums that way.
Yeah.
I mean, the only reason I started using SoundCloud was because it seemed to make sense for me to upload stuff to at the time. It's not like I was ever listening or finding new shit.
I basically used it the
same way bands used to use Reverb Nation, if you remember that.
Reverb Nation, Jesus Christ.
How's that for a blast from the past?
Oh, that's a fast memory in the back of my head.
PH!
Wow.
Where are the internet homies going to find you?
I'm on the Discord, the Socks Make People Sexy Discord. That's where I am at. Yep.
All right. And you can find me at twitch.tv/polyplushy or polyplushy on Twitter. So I guess that's going to do it. We'll catch you next time. But until then, I'm going to need you to do me just a little itty bitty favor and go ahead and listen to more Death Grips.